We are so excited to announce that we have opened the doors to our private membership community, The Symposium. Inside The Symposium, you have access to all of our free and paid content, daily prompts to pull to, live monthly workshops, reading room Zooms, and monthly virtual meetups. We also host monthly challenges and have a lively and engaged community, as well as tarot spread and resource libraries. The Symposium is an incredible community of like-minded folks who value the intersection of tarot, mental health, self-reflection, and personal growth. We're really excited to meet you all inside The Symposium. So head over to thetarotdiagnosis.com and click Join The Symposium today to become a part of our community.
You're listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. We're your hosts. I'm Luna.
And I'm Shannon. We're both clinical psychotherapists who trained together at Johns Hopkins.
Now we are both in private practice in Tampa, Florida, and in Baltimore, Maryland.
We also both happen to have a love for tarot.
Each episode, we work to demystify the tarot and explore its connections to mental and emotional health.
While this podcast may feel therapeutic, it is not meant to take the place of psychotherapy.
Join us while we pull cards to better understand ourselves and those around us.
Hey, Luna.
Hey, Shannon.
So I'm excited about today. I've noticed this theme in my practice lately, and then I was talking to you about it, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm seeing that too. And it seems like several sessions a week, I'm talking about a major identity shift. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be kind of like split down the middle, where half of these conversations are about exploring this identity shift because they want to, like there's this strong desire or pull to start exploring this other side to themselves. But then there's this other half where they're being forced to explore this other mm-hmm. identity or part of themselves, usually because maybe something big or life altering has occurred and it's kind of shocked them into reevaluating who they are or how they want to or how they need to show up in the world. So, you know, and then when you and I spoke, we were like, yeah, that's definitely happening right now. So it seemed right to bring it to the podcast.
Yeah, I always enjoy it when that's how we pick the topic, when it's based off what we're seeing in practice. Like, I don't know. I think that those are fun. And this is actually something that is common all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like there's always at least one or two people I'm working with
totally.
Who are going through something like this. Oh, at least, you know, probably more like half in some way. I think it is an interesting concept, almost like I want to zoom out like super far, almost from the beginning, around the idea of even what is identity or identity formation mm-hmm. and why is it so important to us? Because like, boy, it sure is important to us. And when it gets shaken up, it's weirdly very, very distressing, as if I'm supposed to know who I am
yeah.
and have like come to terms with who I am and love who I am. And that is an eternal, which I think is a misconception that many of us have.
That is so true. I'm so glad that that's kind of where you went, because, you know, I think, you know, in terms of our practice, a lot of people will come into therapy because they're in that stage of wanting to explore. So there isn't that rigidity. Mm-hmm. But I think today it would be wise to explore when there is that rigidity, and that maybe we feel like we're not supposed to talk about other parts of ourselves or explore other parts of ourselves because we feel like, I don't know, we've already formed into who we are. And it's interesting because usually when we talk about identity formation, especially from a psychological perspective, we're often talking about it from childhood, adolescence, and mm-hmm. early adulthood. And then when we talk about it in, you know, middle adulthood or later adulthood, it's always just described as like an identity crisis.
Crisis, right?
Right?
It's a crisis, oh no.
Right? Which I don't like. I don't think that's fair because there's this automatic stigma that's attached to it, like something's mm-hmm. wrong with us or like, or we're suffering in some way. And sure, like when we're exploring a new identity, it can be really uncomfortable. It's supposed to be. But I'm hoping that maybe we can shine some light on the fact that it doesn't have to be a crisis. It doesn't have to be this big, scary thing. And that it's maybe just a normal part of the human experience.
Oh, I love you normalizing right now. Like that. Yes, I think that's so right. I'm so laughing at this idea of like, why do we have to call it a crisis? Just
right?
Because it's uncomfortable. Like, please, It's ridiculous. And you know what just popped in my head? And I feel like I'm getting like tangential way too quick, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, I feel like we see this in our field. At least I see it a lot. Whenever I hop into like Facebook, on Facebook, I'm a member of a couple different therapist groups for different sort of reasons. And I see a lot of this struggling in the therapist community around forming my niche and sort of figuring out how to market myself in a way that I always kind of want to be like, stop. It's okay. You can just be a really good therapist. You don't have to be a therapist who does this or who identifies as this or who is this. Like, you can just be a great therapist. But I feel like that is so against what our culture says. Our culture really forces us, not just as therapists, but as adults, to have this thing that we do really well. And that is our identity. And boy, that is super misguided.
Oh, everything you're saying is super important. And I love that you brought up the therapist experience, because that is so true. I'm kind of like in that group right now of, you know, I had this niche for so long, and now I'm kind of in this phase of my career where I'm like, well, I think I want to like shift out of that. And, you know, I love that you describe kind of what's going on behind the scenes with therapists, because I'm sitting here thinking it's kind of hypocritical. Like, those of us who are like, no, you have to like stay in this niche and like, that's how you're going to be successful. You're like, yes, of course, like from a business perspective, niches are successful. But when you don't allow yourself to explore other areas of interest or other areas of specialty or strengthen other areas of practice, you're denying yourself and your clients something. And then as therapists, it's our job to help clients explore every facet of themselves. So as therapists, why would we pigeonhole ourselves? So I think it's important to say like, okay, having a niche is okay, but are you also allowing yourself to explore other areas where you might thrive or find interest? You don't have to exist in one box. But like you said earlier, it made me think of boxes, society and just people and us. We want to identify everything and put it in a box and say, okay, this goes there and you go here. And that's how things are supposed to be. But that's not realistic.
Okay. We are off to the races, because I want to throw down theory, but no, we should pull a card. Yeah. See, I'm like saying we should pull a card, even though I totally want to talk about theory. We'll do it in a second. So let's shuffle.
Okay.
I'm directing.
Thank you. I know. It's like we're really going.
It was about to get wild. So tell me what you're using today.
I'm using Tarot Vintage. What about you?
I weirdly like made a special trip upstairs to get Golden Art Nouveau. And I realized that I wanted to, because this is very much a deck that I think of with my own tarot identity. This is sort of like my deck. So I just thought it was funny that I, without even thinking about it, was like going for an identity safety blanket with this.
Nice. I love that. I felt the same way with Tarot Vintage. I was like, I need something that feels safe and comfortable.
Yeah.
All right. What'd you pull?
I pulled Strength.
Oh, I thought you were going to say my card for a second. Because it also starts with an ST.
What did you get?
I got the Star reversed.
Oh.
Interesting. Two majors.
That is interesting. Okay. That doesn't happen very often.
I know. What are you thinking about your Strength card?
I mean, I loved it the moment I pulled it. I was like, yes, thank you. Because there's so much about this card. First of all, just the name. I think that being able to tolerate the discomfort of an identity shift takes a lot of strength. That's good. That's okay. I just think that it's just naming what happens when we have to shift our identity. What I love about it is I'm going to hone in on the infinity sign. So in a classic deck, what you have is a picture of a woman and a lion, and the lion could eat her, but like she totally has the lion tamed. But above her head is an infinity sign. And to me, that feels like a really hard-hitting message right there about the idea of identities really are just an illusion. They are the different masks and outfits that we put on in our human life. And it doesn't mean that they're completely untrue, but they are not really who we are. And I think that it's okay if we can't fully define who we are, but we can love who we are as something that is infinite. So I love the affinity sign above the lady in this card.
I love how you described Strength. And now that I'm looking at this, the Star first, it's like, oh, I feel like the cards we pulled are two experiences we could have while we're in this kind of phase or experience of exploring different parts of ourselves. Because I think if the star was upright, it would be a different conversation. Because traditionally upright, it is this very like kind of comforting and hopeful card. And then if we pair that with the strength card, it's like, oh, everything's going to be okay. But I don't know, reverse, there's a different energy to it. So, you know, it comes after the tower, but the star is also kind of like this nice hug. And I feel like when I'm looking at the card, it kind of reminds me of a map, the way like the water's falling on the terrain and stuff. So it's almost like a map forward. And the person is nude, which I think is a nod to like the raw vulnerability that's still present after a tower moment, and almost like getting back to going back to basics. But reverse, there's this experience and sense of being disoriented, which I think is also present when you are trying to figure out who you are, who you want to be, or who you need to be. And instead of the stars being above you, they're suddenly below you, you're nude, there's this feeling of now being exposed, and maybe this fear that you're falling into the abyss, right? Because now these stars aren't pretty above you, they're below you. It's like, oh shit. But I think that's a really common feeling when you're struggling with redefining or re-looking at who you are, or actually going back to something you mentioned earlier, just accepting that you are way more than a singular identity. And actually looking at this card, it does a good job kind of representing that, because some of our identities are rigid, which I think could be represented by the earth, the ground, identities like child, parent, friend, but then other identities are fluid, which could be represented by the water flowing. And I think there's a nice nod to that in this reversed card. But something else that's coming up too, now that I'm really looking at it. So when you look at the star upright, the person's pouring the water into the ground and into this little pond. But when you're looking at it reversed, it looks like the earth is pouring into the cup. So, you know, upright, it's like we're giving back to the earth, but then reverse, the earth is pouring into the cup. So we're receiving, which I think maybe still gives this ode of comfort that you would see or experience in an upright star. That it's almost like even when we feel like we're losing our grip on reality or like barely hanging on, which we often feel when we're going through an identity shift, I think maybe even just searching for like those smallest areas where we might be getting a little drip of water into our cup might help us feel safe.
Oh my gosh, so pretty.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, so pretty. I mean, and I actually feel like that does link back to that infinity sign, this idea of, you know, like it's very Western of us to think like it's up to me, you know, being very ego driven. Right. I have, and like, and I'm not saying this really in a critical way. It's just sort of a, like an observation. I come from Western culture and there are parts of that I really enjoy. I like that I have this feeling that I have the capacity to change, which is very Western. And I appreciate that. And I like that I have sort of some say in the direction that my life goes. At the same time, there is a loneliness that comes with that and a sense of responsibility that is far greater than any of us could ever fully do. Like I cannot fully take control of every identity that I have, every role that I play in this world. Like I can't. And the idea of connecting to there is, you know, the earth gives back to me, or the stars can shine down on me, or there is something infinite, is very, not only comforting.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to dismiss it if we say that it's comforting. It's also humbling, but also there is, if you look at it, I know some people would disagree with me, but if you look hard enough, I think you would see that it's hard to deny that there is some truth to the idea that it's not just me making all of the decisions here.
It's really interesting hearing you talk about that, because one of the cards I pulled to guide the episode was Two of Swords. And I was like, okay, like, I guess I can see that for this topic. But now the way you're describing kind of your experience with the star and reverse and strength, I'm looking at this Two of Swords a little differently, because I feel like, you know, if this were truly about choice, like there are things like you're saying that we can choose and there are lots of things that are outside of our control. Looking at this Two of Swords is interesting now, because I feel like if we were in control of everything and we had a say in everything, maybe the arms wouldn't be crossed. Like they would be kind of just, you're just holding up two swords, but both of these arms are crossed. So it's like the right arm over the left shoulder, the left arm over the right shoulder. It's almost like giving permission to cross over into a realm that maybe you haven't allowed yourself to cross into before. And then the blindfold reminding us there's going to be an inherent ambiguity, an unknown outcome, which all of this I'm saying because you were talking about, you said the word humble and I was like, oh, wait. And I was looking down at this Two of Swords and there's this huge body of water behind this person with this Two of Swords. And it's, I feel like we don't allow ourselves often to explore new ways of being because the fear that we have is like disproportionately high. But this big body of water reminds us that we are so small in comparison to the grand scheme of things. So whatever we decide to do or whatever identity we decide to explore or need to explore, whatever happens in our life that we do have a little bit of control over, or maybe don't have any control over, sometimes we just have to remember that we are a grain of sand on this shore of this water. And then it makes us feel a little bit better knowing that, like, okay, this isn't like the end all be all.
I mean, I think two things are true at this. That was really fun to hear you say that. That was just a really interesting journey. I think what you just said is true, except for when it's not. You know, sometimes, for me, it does make me feel better to kind of take a deep breath and kind of zoom out and be like, I am, you know, I'm here for a short time. This is temporary. This too shall pass. And, you know, it's okay. But sometimes I remember times in my life, certainly, where that was not comforting. Mm-hmm. And when I desperately was grasping for both those swords and trying to be like, all right, I've got my two swords. This is what I'm doing. I have to choose which one. But like, it's up to me. Like, I remember that feeling very clearly about trying to figure it out. And I think that this is where I kind of want to talk about theory a little bit. This feels like a place of developmental stagnation that culturally, I think we're all experiencing. So if you look at stages of development, if you look at Erikson has like these great stages of development that go like a lifelong, and identity formation for Erikson happens, let's say, like, I think it's like ages like 11 through, hang on, I'm looking at it. It's 13 to 21 is called identity versus role confusion. And so the idea is in your teen years, 13 to 21 in adolescence, this is when your identity is supposed to form versus being confused about what role you're in. And, you know, I think that that, you know, is traditionally true, except for we don't live in a culture any longer where we are expected to sort of settle into an identity by the time we're 21. And I think in the past, parts of identity were a little bit easier to just kind of put in place, you know, for a lot of reasons. People worked at jobs for longer periods of time. People died earlier. People would get married at a young age and would generally stay married. You know, like you would generally stay in the same town. But our world today is much more diverse in terms of opportunities. And so to recognize that we are, many of us, going through this stage of identity versus role confusion over and over and over again, to a degree, can keep us in some ways developmentally trapped.
I love where you're going with this. It kind of opened the door. One of the cards I pulled was this, I pulled a lot of reversals, reversed emperor. And I know, I feel like that kind of blends nicely with what you're saying, because I feel like we're either forced or often forget that we are these multifaceted beings with lots of different identities, but we can get stuck on like only acknowledging or over-identifying with one of them. And there's this rigidity that exists, and that rigidity is like inherent in the emperor. And it's almost like there's this unwritten rule, like we're not allowed to explore different parts of ourselves if we have already identified certain parts of ourselves. And that's how we've, you know, presented to the world, right? Yeah. So it reminds me of like growing up. I feel like this was so prominent in middle school. And I have like so many like traumatic memories around this. Like if you strayed from whatever like label or group
that your
you
belong
to. Yeah. Like you were like, oh, what a poser. And you were like hard. hardcore, like, reprimanded by, like, your peers for that. And mm-hmm. I think that, and I feel like that's such a universal experience that we've all had, that kind of reinforced this binary that it has to be this or it has to be that. And if you are this, then you cannot be that. And it's really not fair. But I feel like that experience has really lived in a lot of us and has rooted deeply, because I see it so much now in adulthood that people come into my office or, and even in myself, like, I've really had to, over the past several years, give myself permission to explore different parts of myself and release this kind of reversed emperor vibe that, you know, I'm not allowed to do these things because, or be these things because I am this other thing. And it can be really scary and isolating when we only allow ourselves to exist in one facet of our self-concept and not explore other identities or needs or wants or ideas or interests that we have, you know, in this lifetime.
That's really interesting. And actually, I'm going to make the same point using a different theory. If you looked at one of my personal favorites, I love Piaget. I don't know why, I just really like Piaget.
Yeah.
I think it might be my educational background.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. It's because you're an educator.
Yeah. Piaget has also stages of development. And one that I've always found fascinating is this stage that is ages 7 through 11. It's called concrete operational. And during mm-hmm. that stage, this is when kids start to be able to think more logically. They move out of sort of magical thinking and they start to think logically. And one thing that we see is that kids get really into categories and sorting. So that's where around this age, you start seeing kids start to get into like collecting things or like learning the names of everything. That's where like the massive sticker collection or the massive like magic card or Pokemon cards collections come from, is this idea of being able to collect and categorize and say mm-hmm. like, this is how it is. It's creating your own sense of order in the world.
Yeah.
And oh, wow. Okay. So that's really interesting. So I think we live in a highly complicated world. And so many of us have gotten a little bit stuck in that stage of being in a world that's just so huge and so many options that we sink back into categories, labels. Mm-hmm. Let me put things into neat little lines so it makes sense to me. A moment ago, I split the deck and I don't pull reverse, but there was a card that came out in reverse because it just showed up in the wrong way. And the card is the world. And I didn't know what to do with it until just this moment. That's the issue. The world is so complicated and so upside down in so many ways. And we are desperate to make order of it.
Yes.
And so then we get stuck in this idea of, I understand myself when I know what my identity is, and I'm going to hold fast to it. And it is very challenging to say, you don't need to. You could be this. You could be this. You could be this. I mean, to a degree, there's like a little bit of nuance. You don't have to be pink. You could be mauve. No, no, no. But you could also be green. No, no. I could definitely not be green. I think that there's a lot of that. I see that so much of that with my clients, just this real fearfulness of, but what if I'm not what I thought I was?
Oh, what if I'm not what I thought I was? You know, I think I'm so glad that world reverse came up, because I think this is what we really need to be talking about, the fear and also the anger that can exist. You know, everything that you said, one of the cards that I pulled also reversed is Eight of Cups. And I feel like that is very much in alignment with what you're talking about right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like it represents that forced identity shift, that fear that you're talking about, the anger that I see, like something has happened that has fundamentally changed mm-hmm. the way I view myself in the world. And now you have to figure out what to do moving forward. But reversed, I feel like there's this experience of being frozen and unsure. It goes back to that fear, you know, because upright, the person is, you know, clearly leaving the Eight Cups behind and journeying elsewhere. But reversed, you know, there's this shadow that represents, well, I don't know where to go. where am I, like, I'm just kind of like hanging upside down now. Like all the cups are poured out and empty, and I'm not sure how to even put one foot in front of the other now, because those cups that I spend so much time delicately stacking represent who I am. You know, which I think is, you know, can be really, really scary. And I think actually there's a component here of, but it wasn't on my terms.
Yeah.
And that can be so hard to reconcile, which I think is where the anger comes in. And you said the word stagnation earlier. And I think that's where stagnation can really come in too, when you're in this experience of, well, now I have to kind of shift who I was, or I have to almost leave behind who I was and now step into this new role or this new identity. And, you know, actually I pulled this card a couple times over the last couple weeks, and a few times in reverse. I feel very, this card, Injustice, I don't know what it is. I feel very, very well acquainted with them, but something I noticed about this card is that when it's upright, it looks as if the person who's walking is actually walking towards the moon, and he's like looking at the moon. He's walking towards it, kind of looking, glancing at it. But reversed, it almost looks as though he's turned away from it and walking away from it, which then we could bring the actual moon card in and say it could represent, again, that fear or resistance of looking inward and doing that, you know, self-exploration work that would result in the ability to move forward, you know, even though we're not fully ready.
So, I mean, you're not going to believe this.
What?
Okay. So as you were talking, I was like, this is interesting, blah, blah, blah. I cut the deck, and unbelievably, the exact same thing happened. I'm flipping through the deck right now to see, like, are there more reversed? No, there were two cards in this deck that were upside down. The first one was the World. The second one I just pulled, and it's the Moon reversed.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And then you start talking about it. So that's weird. I think that this is, I had no idea that this conversation was going to go this
way. Right? All these reversals and you talking about reversals, what's happening?
We never really do, like, they show up every once in a while, but we rarely are working so much. But boy, isn't that exactly right? When we talk about shifting identities, it is, everything's in reverse. We're in the upside down, like nothing is making sense. And this idea of letting ourselves kind of drop into the hanged man position, and instead of fighting it, allowing all the blood to rush into our head and to say, okay, I'm going to hang here and I'm not going to understand what's happening. And I'm going to allow that to be the case. Boy, we are kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. And yet we are called to do that over and over and over again, either because I see it all the time with clients. They get married, and all of a sudden, like, they start like realizing that they're having to make choices as an us rather than a me. And that gets weird. Or they have a baby Like, boy, I've done a lot of work with people around, like, I am no longer allowed to be who I was. And this is very upsetting. Or because, like, you know, like, I had this great job and I loved it, and then there was like a corporate merger, and like, now, like, my position is completely different, or we had to move. I mean, there's a million ways. Yeah. And because we are so attached to who we think we are, because we worked so hard to craft that identity, we cannot stand being turned upside down.
Oh, this is so interesting. I love that this is happening right now. And I feel like I need to bring another major in. I had no idea we're going to be talking about all these majors, but
I had no idea.
Now I'm thinking about the Hermit. And if you look at, I know, right? But if you look at the Eight of Cups, it's almost giving me young Hermit vibes. Like, he's got the cloak, he's got the staff, there's this air of mystery, and he's like on this journey. And it's almost very much like then versus now, if you were to pair them together, like the Eight of Cups is then, and then the Hermit is now, which is kind of comforting, but it reminds me of my favorite saying, like, a comfort zone is a beautiful place, but nothing ever grows there. So we, you know, even if we're thrust into these positions that are not comfortable, that we don't like, that, you know, we didn't have any control over, gosh, and I want to be gentle with saying this, because I, you know, I'm feel like we're talking about non-traumatic, you know, instances that aren't like kind of fundamentally changing our brain, but like maybe you're moving or getting a new job or in a new relationship, or maybe you're leaving a relationship or forced to leave a relationship. And these are things that, I don't know, allow us to grow in ways that maybe we wouldn't have been able to grow if we stayed, or there wasn't this kind of big tower moment and we were kind of forced to rebuild. So I don't want to be like, I don't want to be that toxically positive person or be like, there's a silver lining. But, you know, I do believe that in order to get to a place like the Hermit, which I very much love and feel like is kind of like the goal, you do have to maybe bust your knees on some of that rocky terrain a little bit. And that sucks. But I don't know, it's a part of your story.
I mean, I think that that's fair. I don't think it's overly positive. It's just acknowledging that we grow through learning things. And the way we unfortunately often learn things is through, you know, we do it the hard way, through hardship. And it's not the only way, but it is a true and powerful way. A few minutes ago, I pulled King of Swords and I wasn't sure what I was going to do with him, but here he is. That's where King of Swords becomes important. When we are thrust upon the rocks, when we are turned upside down, when we don't know what's going on, we can go to that King of Sword energy and say, okay, how do I want to think about this? What is the most logical way for me to think about this? And to be careful with the idea of, oh, I have some thoughts that are very negative and very fearful, and recognizing that we can just slice those out if we want to and say, okay, yeah, I have that fear, but that's not really serving me. So what's another way of thinking about it?
Oh, that's interesting. I like the way that you are talking about King of Swords right now. It's funny. So he actually came out for me too. And I put him off to the side. Yeah. Because I was like, nah, I don't know what I'm going to say about him. So he's just kind of like off in his own world. But I want to pair him with yet another major that I pulled in reverse for this episode.
What is going on?
I know. I was like, what the hell? Like and it's the Lovers reversed. But I feel like the Lovers reversed, pairs really well with the King of Swords. And I'm going to try and do this because it makes sense in my head. But I feel like the Lovers reverse kind of represents this internal and maybe external, depending on what you're experiencing, like conflict that we experience when we realize that the identity shift that we're going through or the identity shift that we're exploring contradicts like what we knew about ourselves or like our maybe the foundation of our self-concept. Because upright, I view the Lovers as this embrace of duality. But reverse, the shadow component highlights the trouble of allowing that integration or acceptance of ourselves. So, you know, we live in this box where, or this box, we live in this world that wants to put us in boxes, like we mentioned earlier. And if you identify with one box and that's who you are, and you better not try to connect that box with another, because then, I don't know, maybe someone will yell at you for it or you'll be canceled. And we fear cancel culture, right? Or public humiliation or shame. And it really stops us from looking at who we are. But I feel like then if we bring King of Swords in, it allows us to acknowledge, okay, well, maybe there are parts of you that contradict and that just is what it is. Like none of us are going to be able to say everything that we feel and believe and experience fully flows beautifully together. And I think that there needs to be this acknowledgement that, you know, we might feel and believe and experience one thing about ourselves, but then also have this other thing that feels like it doesn't belong or looks like it doesn't belong on the outside. And maybe it doesn't, but I feel like King of Swords kind of gives us permission to say, yep, that's true. Like, that's it. Like, you have to acknowledge and accept that.
Okay. My brain is totally on fire. There's a lot going on here. And I'm really like wigged out by all these reversals, particularly the reversal of the Lovers. You and I talked about the Lovers recently for a symposium thing, and I can't stop thinking about it, honestly. And I think that when we look at the Lovers, I think often we're missing a separate message. And that's the message of almost a tower moment again. I mean, if we look at the image, we're looking at the image of the moment when people were thrown out of paradise because of a mistake that was made. And talk about change of identity. Oh my goodness. Like this is kind of like symbolically the ultimate change of identity. Oh, look, you get to live in paradise oh no, you made a major mistake. Something happened. Now you are a complete, everything about you is different. Everything about you is different. And how do we deal with that identity shift? For you to pull this in reverse right next to King of Swords feels really, really, really powerful. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of this idea of, yeah, in our life, sometimes we do have these really incredibly painful identity shifts that either happen because we screwed up or because of whatever, somebody else screwed up, or the world can be cruel. Something happened and everything is different now. And we do have the ability to go on. I think that that's an important part of why the Lovers is an important card here. It's not like game over.
Right.
You move on, and you move on in a different way with a different set of tools, knowing more, understanding, licking your wounds, and you move on. And King of Swords is helpful with that in terms of saying, okay, what am I going to do?
So something else that's interesting that I pulled, that I was like, let's see if these even are relevant here. But I feel like you're going to have a field day with them. And I feel like they kind of lend nicely with what you were just saying. Two cards that I pulled, they were upright, not reverse, that showed up next to each other. I know, right? Are the Devil and Judgment.
Buckle up.
I know, right? And I feel like it's so interesting. I feel like King of Swords is kind of just existing above all these cards right now. It's how I'm envisioning them in my head. But I feel like the Devil's very much representing this unhealthy attachment that we have to ideas about ourselves or the world or our self-concept. And when we stay attached to those, which if we want to explore the Buddhist principle of suffering, it's because of attachment. Mm-hmm. We don't get to experience maybe the highest version of ourself, which I think is how you typically describe Judgment card, or becoming in alignment. I think that's how you say it, with Judgment. And if you were to put the King of Swords above these two cards, it's almost like that kind but assertive mentor person you have in your life saying, like, get your shit together, like, stop. Because if you keep existing in this Devil space, it's not going to be fun, and nothing changes if nothing changes.
Ooh, you're right. I'm having a field day, right?
Yeah.
So everything you're saying about Devil is so right, you know, and how King of Swords is the comeback. And I'll link it back to the Lovers and the concept of free will. This is an amazing gift that humans have, is that we do have free will and we do have the capacity to think for ourselves. That is hard. Because we also have confusing thoughts. Some of them are internal. Some of them are external. Some of them are sort of like our inner critic, is what we talked about last week. Sometimes that inner critic is a voice that was placed in our mind. Sometimes it's just there. But we also have this other voice in our mind that has the ability to say no. And that, understanding that and learning how to flex that muscle, is a way of setting yourself free or a way of moving forward. And I think that then that brings us, that's how we battle the Devil. Mm. When you take that to the Judgment card of, well, what do I want? What I want is to not necessarily, I think what I want is to be my old self. Mm. But that's not what you actually want. What you actually want is to feel at peace with who you are, and to be in alignment so that in any given moment, you can feel a sense of comfort and happiness or joy or even peacefulness. And that has nothing to do with the labels or the identity or the things that you have. And that type of thinking comes from being in alignment. That's Judgment card. And we get there through King of Swords.
That was an incredible journey that I feel
I'm tired.
Right? And I feel like it leads us to maybe our final card of the episode. We'll see. And it's Ten of Cups. And I feel like there was, I'm trying to remember what was said in the reading room recently in the symposium. I feel like someone said something really powerful about this card. And I have it written down somewhere. Maybe you remember it.
I remember.
Okay, tell me what they said, because I'm wondering if it's how I'm perceiving the card right now.
Well, I think it was a conversation between you and somebody else, and we were talking about how it acts as a bridge, and how like it looks like a bridge, and how each one of those cups is filled with something different.
Yeah, so I'm looking at this as like 10 different versions of ourselves, or 10 different lives. And then in each of those lives, like in each of those cups, are essentially like a mixture of 100 different, or hundreds potentially, different stories and experiences that truly make our life full. And we can experience those 10 different cups and hundreds of stories and experiences without the fluidity of our self-concept and identity.
I mean, okay, so I'm going to one-up you on the card, because what you just said is you brought us to temperance.
Ah, yes. Oh, my year card.
It's such a good card. And I think that that's really where we're going with this idea of shifting identities, is that we go back to this concept of the box. We want our identity to be this. We want to be this. I mean, like, and boy, we just love this, don't we? I mean, like, how many of us are super attached to our labels, whether it's like my job or however I identify, or like even stuff like my diagnosis or my Enneagram type or my Myers-Briggs type or my astrology type or like where I went to school or whatever. Like, we really get attached to these identities and we think that they mean something. But when we apply it to Ten of Cups, the way you just talked about it, or when we apply it to Temperance card, we see that they all blend together, which doesn't give us any words. Like, if I take all of my identities and start pouring them between cups, I don't have words anymore. I just have stuff in a cup. And some of the stuff in the cup can splash out, but there's still, it still exists. It just exists in a different form. That water didn't go away. It just got soaked into the earth. So when we think about fighting for identities, recognizing that I am more than one identity, I'm more than multiple identities, and parts of that will never go away.
Thank you so much for listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok under the handle @TheTarotDiagnosis and join us while we pull daily cards and explore tarot and mental health in between podcast episodes. You can also subscribe to our podcast to make sure that you never miss an episode. If you have a topic or question that you'd like for us to explore on the podcast, you can contact us directly on our website, www.thetarotdiagnosis.com.